Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Gio Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, we had the schedule release on Wednesday, so, you know, we're going to talk. Yeah, we're going to get there. Wait, was it Wednesday or Thursday? I have my days all screwed up.
Yeah, it was Wednesday. Yeah. All right.
So we're going to talk about that. That's going to be in the second half of the show. But first, you know, we're going to get down to business, as always, with the roster moves from the past. But not week. It's been more like it's we've about a week and a half or so since we were last recording a podcast. So let's kick it off.
Yeah, I was going to say, surprisingly, it's we've had more moves than I have expected.
Yeah. First off, tight end Josh Hill retired.
Yeah, like out of the blue, right? Like, very unusual, right?
He lost the will to play or something, you know, like it was time. Or he realized he was a Lion and retired.
So here's the thing. When they signed him, everyone was excited. And then they put him on a Zoom call with the media. And they put him on a Zoom call after, I think it was after, like a little bit after Jamal Williams, who is like this hyped up, like, you know, animated, excited to be here. Just, you know, he's got this ball of energy. And then Hill comes up a little bit later. I don't remember if it was like later that day or a couple days later or something like that. But, and he is just completely flat. He doesn't smile.
That was unfair to Josh Hill. They should have put him on first.
Yeah. He didn't smile. He didn't express excitement. It was like 10 full minutes of him just being like passing out generic answers and not a whole lot else.
That's him though.
Well,
maybe
right.
Well, see the same way in New Orleans.
But that's what I was wondering. And then he finally cracked a smile when he talked about his kid wanting to go somewhere with snow. But like several times throughout the first 10 minutes, he kept referring to New Orleans as like his home and how he had roots there. And like after it was over, I talked to Jeremy and I was like, man, that one was weird. Like he just did not seem motivated. He did not seem like he was all in on this. And then sure enough, he ends up retiring. And so I wasn't, I guess, totally surprised, even though it did kind of come out of the blue. But man, that Zoom call, the 12 minutes or whatever that we were with him, he did not seem like he was enjoying himself at all. And I did wonder if it was just his personality, because I think that's what Jeremy said too. But man, you look back at that, it's like, holy cow, that was a bunch of red flags that I don't think any of us really, could put our finger on exactly what was going on. So yeah, unfortunately he retires and now all of a sudden the Lions need a number two tight end.
And they got that pretty quickly. They re-signed Darren Fells. So we're bringing him back in the fold.
Yeah, I like this move. He was good when he was with the Lions. Back in 2018, then he goes to the Browns for a year. He plays well with the Browns, moves that into a top spot with the Houston Texans for 2 years, and he's playing well with them. He's an extraordinarily good blocker. He's a massive guy. He's an excellent tight end too. He's getting up in age, so he's no longer
35 this season.
Yeah, so but he's an excellent compliment. Like he's everything that you could want in a guy that you are going to pair with T.J. Hockenson. So he scores a touchdown like every like six catches or something like that. Like he doesn't catch the ball a lot, but when he does, he's scoring touchdowns more quite often. So. It's good. It's a good, he's a red zone threat, good blocker, nice number two. He was really good the year he was with the Lions. And, I think this is a very good signing and, you don't lose a whole lot, right? The only thing you lose is the ability. Josh Hill had the ability to play like an H-back role. You don't get that with Fells, but Fells is a bigger target, more reliable, more of a red zone threat. So, you know, you're getting that out of him. So
55 receptions over the last two seasons with Houston, 653 yards and 11 touchdowns. So that's it. One out of every five receptions was a touchdown. Will Jared Goff use them that way? We don't know. His career started. I'm digging deep here. His NFL career started at age 28. He was a pro basketball player or something, right? Wasn't he in Europe or something?
Correct. Yep. Yeah. That's correct.
I was like, because I'm looking at this, I'm like, man, he's only played seven seasons and he's 35 years old. But I was, there's something else to this. All right. So Darren Fells, he's back. So yes. You know, everybody can get used to that again. All right, good. Guard Evan Hine also signed. So we were talking about last time we were on. We had only 12 offensive linemen, and really they would be looking to have 15 when training camp starts. So they're inching their way there.
So Heim was a left tackle at Minnesota State Mankato, right? He was a small school
fine guy. Hockey school.
He was part of the 2020 draft cycle, but he was invited to the combine. And then when COVID canceled his pro day, everyone lost interest in him because they had no information on him, right? So he kind of fell through the cracks. So he spent the last year not in the NFL. Nobody picked him up. And then he went back to a pro day at Minnesota, and he was able to show his, show what he had. And he's an athletic left tackle that projects as a guard. And the Lions signed him he's basically like an undrafted free agent. He's just an undrafted free agent from a year ago where COVID kind of zapped him. Hunter Thedford, it's kind of the same way. He's a guy who's been on the roster for longer, but these are both guys who didn't get pro days and then basically sat out all of 2020 because of it. Now they're getting a shot here in 2021.
That's impressive. I mean, you know, he didn't play football at all, so that's impressive that he kept himself in shape. And
yeah.
So, I mean, he's probably not going to make the roster. Maybe this is the last we'll hear of him. I've got to be very careful about who I say is going to end up starting on the Lions offensive line for at least one game this season. I don't think Evan Hines one of them. You never know.
Interesting potential. You could see him, you know, we'll see how he looks, in camp to get a better feel for him.
Not the same as Matt Nelson, but in that same world, right? You know, where it's not even really, because Nelson moved over from defense, whatever.
Yeah.
Heim's just a guy. They're going to see what he's got. All right, yep. Last one, the big one, the big piece of information that's kind of still surprising to all of us. Kerryon Johnson has been released, and in the time since we last talked, everybody's been claimed by the Eagles. So, Eric, why do you think we released him?
That's a good question.
That's not all, Eric, right there.
I mean, look, they want a pass catcher. He was a pass catcher. They want or a pass blocker. Pass catcher, pass blocker, he did them both. I think they were scared off a bit by his injuries. He really lost some of that burst after his recovery from the last couple seasons, injuries the last couple seasons. Last season was the first one that he played completely in the NFL, and he did that as a third down role. My belief is that they projected Jamar Jefferson to be a better option, and Kerryon might have been like RB4 in their minds, and so they cut him and they give him a chance to catch on somewhere else. By getting a chance to catch on with the Eagles, he'll now get in the spring camp. He'll have better opportunity to be prepared for fall camp. And that gives him better opportunity to get into the Eagles roster long-term. Right. So I don't know if like they looked at him and said, he's just not part of our plans and we're just going to let him go. He was the highest paid running back, but again, it wasn't that much. So I don't think it was a cap cutting move. It was a bit strange, but as we're finding out, a lot of the guys that are from the former regime, they're not safe. And it doesn't matter what role you played last year. There's no guarantees that you're going to be in that role in 2021.
Yeah, Kerryon Johnson slated to be the in your projections, 18th highest paid player on the team at just over $2 million. Johnson's second round draft pick, right? You know, here's another, that's a lot of draft capital we spent on him. That was, and it wasn't, as you pointed out, wasn't the Holmes group. It was the Quinn gang. Mm-hmm. And he ends his Detroit career, like you said, the injury plagued, played in 34 games, but between rushing and receiving had 1,752 yards. So, that, you know, that's not bad. In 34 games, that's not so bad. You know, 34 games, that's two of what this season and next season will look like with the new 17-game schedule. So, you know, 850 yards a season, you know, not bad. I think we maybe expect a little bit more, you know, out of a second-round draft pick, and hopefully DeAndre Swift, you know, provides more than that in his, you know, year two, right? But, yeah, this is kind of odd. And if, you know, you might have nailed it on the head that they don't see the burst anymore, and maybe it is time to move on. And, you know, and I think for the most part, the fans – I was included. I like Kerryon. He wasn't great, you know, and it, you know, it's kind of a lost draft pick. But at the same time, it's like, well, he wasn't bad. Like you said, he could block, and he could, you know, he made plays out of the backfield. He wasn't a big playmaker, but you know, like he could get a few yards here and there. I'm surprised they didn't keep him around as the third back.
Yeah, I'm with you. I it was a bit surprising, but again, I think it speaks to the fact that they're going to want their guys in the situation to succeed. And my guess, and again, just a guess, my guess is that they prefer Jefferson over Kerryon stylistically. So he's an Eagle now, and he gets to join Darius Slay, Travis Fulgham, Jason Huntley, Aaron Sipos, and I think some other guys that are all former Lions.
Yeah. Who? All right. So Schwartz is the he's still the defensive coordinator.
No,
right?
Didn't he retire? Didn't he retire this year?
Mm. Who's over there? It's got to be a scout or something, right?
No,
you can't. There's no way they don't have no Lions people or ex Lions people.
They just,
you know, why would they keep picking up all these Lions?
I know, it's very
strange. There's a leak somewhere.
Something. I mean, I expect. I expected Lions to go to the Giants like we saw in the offseason because you have former Lions scouts in the front office, and there's the connection, the Patriot connection. And so I wasn't surprised to see a couple of Lions go to the Giants. But, yeah, I don't know if there is a connection with the Eagles. I mean, maybe there is. I'm just not conscious of it right now.
Yeah, Schwartz stepped away from coaching this year. Mm-hmm. All right. The other news. I do have to point out to everybody listening, and you know, we point out 17 games from now how it all pans out. But you didn't like Jefferson, right? I mean, it's not you don't like, you don't think he quite fit. You know, didn't that draft pick didn't make as much sense to you, right?
Well, it makes more sense now, right?
So you're on board, because I was going to say, like, this is interesting because you are a Kerryon Johnson guy.
Yeah,
and they got rid of. This would be like the first red. This is the first Eric red flag from the organization, the new regime. Mm-hmm. And you're, as everybody knows, quite optimistic.
Mm-hmm. But
I see you're taking a step back and you're looking at this holistically and saying, "Hey, you know, maybe this is obviously their plan. Let's see what they're doing."
Yeah, I think their plan was when they got when Jefferson became available to them and they were able to draft him. I don't think that was a player that they were anticipating getting. And when they did, Kerryon became expendable to them. And that's why he was released. It's not that I don't like Jefferson. I actually think Jefferson is a talented player. My concern is that he's got some of the same concerns Kerryon did, where he doesn't have the long speed. But the big thing is he's more of a volume runner, right? Which means the more carries he gets, the better he plays. And as a third back, you're not anticipating him being a volume guy. And so I like having a guy like Jefferson as insurance. I don't know if there's a role, but if they're just planning on platooning two guys in Swift and Williams, that's great. I don't know exactly what role. Like you could see, okay, Kerryon is the third down guy. He has a specific role that he fits into. That's a traditional role. I don't know if Jefferson is that. I mean, I like him as a player, but it is a bit of a strange fit. I'm interested to see him in camp and see, you know, maybe I'm missing something. Like I said, he's not a bad runner. He takes what he's in front of him, and he typically falls forward. He doesn't typically lose yards. Again, that's a Kerryon Johnson trait as well. But I got to see his intangibles, you know what I mean, before I can really pass judgment on him.
All right. And update, James J. Schwartz, better known to us as Jim Schwartz. Mm-hmm. He did step away from coaching, but now he's a senior defensive assistant for the Tennessee Titans. So okay. Read into that what you want.
Going back to his, where he became famous.
Yeah. This is the previous haunt before he became Lions head coach. Yeah. All right. Tyrell Crosby, this one stuck in your craw today until Friday.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're hearing or if there was discussion started that if Tyrell Crosby was on the trading block. I happen to be in your corner on this one.
Yeah, Fowler from ESPN tweeted that out last night that Crosby was on the trade block and the Lions were listening to offers right now. That doesn't mean they're actively trying to trade him. It just means they're open to trading him. And this, again, he's in the same draft class as Kerryon. He's vulnerable. He's in the last year of his contract. And if they don't think he fits in, then they're willing to move on. Now for me, I just disagree with this premise entirely. And if you missed my rant on Twitter, essentially it is my stance here is there's a certain number, certain positions on the field where the first backup or like the third player at that position is as valuable as a starter. Corner is one of them. Your third corner is just as valuable as your starting corner. You need a really good third corner because injuries at the position, someone's not adapting well. You have to have quality people at the position. And the next one is offensive tackle. You have to have a quality third offensive tackle because offensive tackles get injured. In the 2 years that Crosby was the swing tackle before he took over at right tackle last year, in those 2 years, he started 7 games and played the majority of snaps in 9. So 9 of those 32 games, that's almost a third of the games, he was playing a starting role. Now, if you trade Crosby and this pattern continues of you having to replace your OT3 plays a third of the games, that's now Matt Nelson. Matt Nelson, who was a defensive tackle or defensive end 2 years ago. Like, this would be the first big red flag for me. And there's a lot of people that are against me on this, which is really surprising to me because it's very clear to me. I don't think you're going to get a good return. I know he was a starter last year, and I know people think like because he was a starter, he's magically going to generate a high return. I just don't see it. I can't see anyone giving more than a fifth rounder, and I wouldn't be willing to give up a fifth round player next year for a player that you could use this year. Yes, he's on an expiring contract, but again, I would be willing to pay him to keep him as a third offensive tackle in the future, because that is an important role to me. Secondly, let me add one more point.
Keep going. I'm not here to stifle you.
Last year, Vitae was paid $10 million to come in and start at right tackle, lost the job to Tyrell Crosby. When he came back from injury, he could not beat Crosby for the position. Crosby won the job. Now we're all just magically penciling in Vitae at guard because Campbell just happened to say, yeah, we're going to use him inside. Who's to say that Crosby won't beat him again? Like, who's to say that Crosby couldn't be your starting right guard? Look, I know he hasn't played right guard in the NFL and Vitae has, and Vitae probably has the edge there. I know Crosby has practiced there, but he's a better tackle. That's why they've always kept him there. But who's to say? He could be your fifth best offensive lineman, like right now. And if he's your fifth best offensive lineman, you don't need to trade him. You need 6 offensive linemen. You need 5 starters and somebody who's versatile. And whether it's Crosby in at right guard or Vitae in at right guard, the other guy is versatile enough to play as a backup. You need that. If you trade him, you weaken one of the strengths of your team. And I don't see it. Like, I don't see the that's not worth it to me for a fifth round pick, right? I don't like, look, let's say he wants to starter money and he doesn't want to return and someone is willing to pay him, because that was one of the arguments today, was someone's going to pay him like Bob Quinn paid Vitae. And I'm like, first of all, no, because Bob Quinn's not a GM and he's not going to shell that kind of money out again, right? No one's that crazy, right? But even if he did get big money, starter money, $8 million, $10 million, that's going to help Detroit with a comp pick the year later, right? Like, there's a benefit to keeping him around this year. And if you can retain him, there's a benefit to keeping him around long-term because he plays a pivotal role. And if you do lose him because someone's willing to pay him a lot of money, well, then that's going to help you with the draft pick in the long run anyways. You're just going to get that pick a year later. So in my mind, you need to keep him. You need look, if Decker gets injured, or if Sewell gets injured, you're starting Matt Nelson, and if you want Jared Goff to succeed, you cannot start Matt Nelson. Like, it's as simple as that. If you are legitimately saying, I want to give Jared Goff a chance to succeed and a chance to be the starting quarterback, you need to be able to give him options, and you need to have a backup at certain spots in case they fail. Because if Matt Nelson is your starter, Jared Goff is on his back. And if Jared Goff is on his back, you're not giving him a chance to succeed, and you're losing game. I hate to be as black. I hate to like badmouth Nelson, because I don't even think, I think Nelson has potential, but he's just not there. He's just not. You need a player that can step in at tackle. And if you don't have that player, you're going to start, the L's are going to come on the schedule, just one after another, automatic L's, because Jared Goff needs it. If you want to let him succeed, he needs a capable tackle rotation, or not rotation, but capable tackle stable.
Contingent.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were talking that Tyrell Crosby being traded for a fifth-round pick, and I would agree that the value is just not there to make that deal. But now let me play with you.
Yep.
Fourth-round pick. Would you do it?
I still don't like it, because look.
All right. Well, okay. Go ahead.
I still don't like it. I would understand it more. I still wouldn't like it.
Third round pick.
Okay. Now we're talking about a top 100 player, and now we're in a better spot. The problem is for me, is that you are absolutely throwing the offensive line under the table if there's an injury. You're not giving yourself any wiggle room. And that is not a smart way to play. If you're saying I can get a third rounder, it's easier to palate. I'm still not going to like it, though, but I could palate it better.
Second rounder.
Again, you could palate it. Okay.
First rounder.
Yeah, well, of course, a first rounder.
All right, then you're in. All right, then you're in. No questions asked.
But I don't even think he's going to get.
No, he's not going to get anything that high. No, but
I don't think he'd get a day two. Like, in all honesty, like I don't even think he'd get a fourth. To be, and I hate to say that. It's just, this is how the market works. You know what I mean? Like, you don't. He's a player that's not slotted for a starting role. Teams know this, right? And so everybody, another one of the arguments today was, well, you can just sign a free agent that's just as good as him. So why not trade him, get a draft pick, and then sign a guy off the free agency wire? Well, why wouldn't the other team just do that? You know what I mean? Sure. Like, yeah. And so.
If you could basically get the same guy, the other team should just do that, because they don't have to give up any capital to do it.
The only counter argument to that would be, Crosby's 26 and they think Crosby could be a fixture on their offensive line. But when you look at Tyrell Crosby, and as much as I like the guy, I don't look at him and say, that's a guy that I'm willing to give up a top 100 pick to get and then make him a staple starter on my offensive line. Like, I just don't think teams are going to look at him that way. And I know the Lions used him in that way last year, but they're not, there's a reason they were excited to get Sewell. because Sewell is a massive upgrade. Tyrell Crosby can hold, you know, he can hold things down, and he could play a starting role, but he's not a guy that you're building foundations around, and a guy that, you know, you're going to be spending a lot of capital to try and acquire. And I like him a ton. I think he's a very valuable player at a very valuable position. I just don't see where people think he's going to generate this big return. It just doesn't work like that, especially this time of year. You know, the value on these guys is so low right now. It just, you're not going to get what you want.
All right. Moving on from Crosby, Jeff Okuda, the reports are that he is near 100% health, and this is well in advance of training camp.
Yeah, so he spoke to the media last week and said that he was basically at 100%. He spent the offseason training in Detroit doing rehab. I stayed in Detroit, and he was at Allen Park quite a bit learning and rehabbing, and he spent some time with the staff. Had some very interesting comments to say. I mean, you know the young man. He's very articulate and very purposeful in what he says. And one of the first things out of his mouth was, when he was talking about the new coaching staff, was the stuff they're telling me is so good, I wish I knew this last year. And if that is not an indictment on the last coaching staff, I don't know what is. And I don't think he like just offhandedly said that. I think he said that for a reason. So that's a nice feather in their cap for the new coaching staff, I think.
Well, yeah, hopefully he's healthy and hopefully they can develop him, because, you know, even though it was somewhat expected, well, last year he got hurt, which is the worst part about it. But
yeah,
in the games he did play, expectedly, he didn't really perform too well. But now in year two, we'll see. Hopefully he makes it makes quite a bit. He doesn't have to leap himself into being a Pro Bowl caliber player, but I think he should take a pretty big jump year two, as long as he can remain healthy.
Boy, it'd be hard to ask for two better coaches than Aaron Glenn and Pleasant, right? I mean, like, he has a very formidable tandem coaching him. And so I'm expecting a very high jump in production from him.
All right. Next up, the Frank Ragnow extension. We talked about Frank getting the extension last time, but now you got the numbers for it.
Yeah. So he is, I just had it. I apologize. He got a 4-year deal. All right. And it's worth just under $70 million. So that comes out to about $13.5 million per year. Now, he was scheduled.
Wait. Mm-hmm. Just 4 years, just under $70
million?
That's
correct.
Not 13 per year. That's like 17 and a half per year.
It's an extension. So the 70, I believe, is a cumulative total for the next. Okay. So it's a 4-year extension on top of the 2 years that he had, right? Okay. So he is signed through 2026, right?
All right. That makes more sense. Now you're making more sense.
Okay. So he's going to be signed for the next 5 years, essentially. And 6 years. 6 years. So he signed for the next 6 years. His new contract is going to total around just under $70 million. So that's going to give him an average of about 13.5. Now,
yeah, so it's like 6 years, $68 million, what it ends up.
Roughly.
Because that was the original report. It's like 4 years, $70 million. Like, that's $17.5 million a year. But no, mm-hmm. You're right. He's got $14 million coming this year, next year in total, or it's almost $15 million. $2 million this year, $12 million next year. And then it rolls into that 4 years for 54. And that's that 13.5 number you're throwing out there. Yep.
Yeah. So it makes him the highest paid center in the league. And I think it's definitely something that he has earned. Previously, Corey Lindsey, the other top center in the league, left the Packers to join the Chargers. He signed a 5-year, $62.5 million. So his is around 12.5. So Ragnow gets another million more than him. And it shows it shows an easy investment, right? Like they're saying, you're our guy, right? Like you are one of the fixtures. And so they now have three really steady offensive linemen. Decker signed through 2024, Ragnow now 2026, Sewell signed through 2024 with a 2025 option. So you've got three really good staples. And now it's just a matter of, do you have the pieces to fit in? Jonah Jackson sure looks like he's going to be one of them. The Crosby Vitae thing is really kind of up in the air, I guess, at this point. So that long-term solution at right guard is still up for grabs. But, man, what a great no-brainer extension, right? Like this was an easy decision. He is a phenomenal player. He's just getting better. I know, like I said, Lindsey was technically graded out. He was the All-Pro, and Ragnow was the second-team All-Pro last year. I just don't see anybody standing in Ragnow's way for the foreseeable future. Like, he's that good. He should be the most dominant center in the league this year, and it should just continue, right? So, well-deserved. He's an extraordinarily humble guy. His presser, if you didn't catch that, that was a tearjerker, talking about his family and how much it meant to him to be able to take care of them. And so very impressive young man. He's always been heartfelt and honest, and he's a super good guy. And I think he's well deserving of this. And I'm glad to see that he will be part of the organization over the next half decade.
Seems like it's a rather palatable extension too. Set almost $70 million over the next 6 years is really just, little over 10 million. Well, it's 11, little over 11 million a season. Mm-hmm. And when you look at that, like Hal Vitae is making 10.4 million this year. So, this might be Vitae's last year, right? I know he's through 2024, but they can get out of it at a certain point, right?
He has, 14.6 million left in guarantees. So after this year, he'll 10.4 of that will go, and that'll leave just 4.2. And so you can cut him with that and take a cap hit of 4.2 and save yourself about 6.2 million next year if you want to move on from him, which is realistic unless he decides, unless he's healthy and he starts playing, at a higher level than what he showed last year.
But back to Ragnow, it seems like a palatable extension, especially since how good he is. Takes him to age 30. So if he stays healthy, this will probably turn out to be a pretty good deal, especially as the salary cap inflates after this year.
Yeah. Yeah. This is easy decision for Brad Holmes and company.
All right. Next up, as you pointed out last time, four spots open. Well, it was three last time. Right now it's four. Four spots. No. Well, no, it still remains four. Whatever.
Yeah,
four spots open on the 90-man roster.
Yeah, it's four. And then things got a little confusing with Nick Pickett, who announced – the Oregon announced that Nick Pickett signed, and then it turns out he just got a tryout. So that's why it was down to three at one point. But now it's actually four because he's not actually signed. He's just in camp.
So who are we signing?
Well, that's the question, right? You got four spots. You've got a whole bunch of guys in minicamp this weekend. Most of them are signed. And you've got five guys unsigned. And on a tryout basis. So if one of those guys ends up impressing, they could sign one of them to a relatively cheap contract. This has happened in the past. This happened specifically with Tom Kennedy. Tom Kennedy came in on a tryout and earned himself a spot on the 90-man, and then he ended up making the practice squad, and then was even called up to the regular season at one point, and then went back to the practice squad again later. But Kennedy is a guy who got a tryout, and he's been on the roster for the last 2 years because of it in some capacity. So it's possible one of these tryout guys makes it. But realistically, I could see them not, and I could see them going back to free agency in order to try and land a couple of these, you know, obvious holes that they have.
Yeah, well, that's, I guess, what I was asking, you know, is at safety, you know, like who's still out there that they, but that might not be the pool they're picking from because they might be waiting until more veterans get cut.
Yeah, it's possible. We've seen some of them, you know, and I'm actually not 100% sure that all of these undrafted guys will make the stay on the 90-man roster after minicamp. It's possible they get a look at some of these guys and they're like, yeah, it's not what we thought, and they're going to move on. We've seen that happen in the past as well. But if you're looking at veterans, I wrote an article, the 10 free agents I thought the Lions should look at. I actually wrote this. I had the whole thing written and it was set to publish the next morning. And number one on my list was Darren Fells. And then they signed Darren Fells. And so I had to rewrite a portion of the article because Fells had kind of messed me up. But the 10 guys, so this was right in that time. This was about a week ago that I wrote this. The top 10 guys on my list, in order by position, I put Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson is a reliable third down back who is confident running between the tackles. He's good in a zone offense. And he would be a guy who you could argue is on par, if not slightly better than Kerryon. And so he's a guy I would be interested in. I think he kind of got utilized improperly in Houston last year. And he would be an interesting guy. I don't know if he'd be comfortable being the third option, which he very clearly would be. But Duke Johnson is a name that kind of stood out to me. Stop me if you want to comment on any of these guys, but no, I'll just keep going.
Yeah, I will, but no, okay. No comment on Duke Johnson.
Trey Burton is another tight end. You know, you got to remember Hunter Bryant went on reserve injured, and so they might need another tight end. Trey Burton is still out there. He's a very competent tight end too. And good blocker, good pass catcher. If you could get him relatively cheap, he would make that tight end room very formidable. At guard, Trey Turner is out there. He would be my top offensive line option. This is a guy who was a 6-time Pro Bowler and was traded last year to the Chargers. And then just struggled. I mean, mightily, like had a just disastrous season, but Anthony Lynn was part of the Chargers when they traded for him. So it's very possible that they're interested in bringing him back over here to Detroit again, because maybe Lynn liked him a lot. Lynn would definitely know what the problem was. And he's a guy who had 1 year where he just fell off, and you could take a flyer on him. And for this crew, like I said, we're unsettled at right guard. If Turner was able to capture even a portion of what he's shown in the past, he can end up being a guy who could start, because like I said, he was a 6-time Pro Bowler before last year. So Turner's up there for me. Melvin Ingram, I think every day that passes, the price goes down a little bit on Melvin Ingram. If you don't trust your health, you didn't draft an edge, you didn't sign an edge. So maybe Ingram is the guy who appeals to you. And then the rest are all defensive backs. Brian Poole, Nicole Roby-Coleman, and DJ Hayden are all nickelbacks that I thought would be guys capable of challenging Corn Elder, if not beating him outright. Hayden, if you remember, the former Lion. Roby-Coleman had some of his best seasons under Aubrey Pleasant with the Rams. And Brian Poole is just an excellent nickel. And I think he would be an intriguing guy at safety. The big name is Malik Hooker. Trey Boston had his best career with the Chargers under Anthony Lynn. And Vaccaro played played under Aaron Glenn with the Saints. So those are the three safeties I identified. Vaccaro's I'm not super interested in, but I think he's a better player than Will Harris. So I would be interested in him if, as far as that goes. But Hooker and Boston are very interesting safeties to me. I think you could sign one of those guys and they could start. I don't know when they would be willing to come in. I don't know if they're waiting until after the summer, like when you get closer to training camp to sign, or if the market's just low for them. My guess is that after rookie minicamp, we should see a little bit of movement next week. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're looking to bring in any of these veterans. I just think if they do, those are the top 10 to kind of keep an eye on.
All right, rookie minicamp. You just mentioned it. Let's talk about it. There's going to be 32 players in attendance. The big one, Sewell, he's not going to be there. He had a positive COVID result. So in perfect Lions curse fashion, I wouldn't put this in curse territory, but Sewell, like a true Baptist Lion baptism, you know, he can't make it to the rookie camp. Even though he could be, I don't know if he has any symptoms or not, you know, he could be more or less healthy, let's hope he's fine and he'll be around when training camp starts. So if you want to talk about the 32 will be there. Do you want me to give you the rundown?
Let me blow through it real fast. It's the 6 draft picks and the 13 undrafted players that we've talked about in the past. I mentioned earlier that Thedford and Heim were guys that were part of the 2020 draft cycle. They get to participate in this. Then there's also a handful of guys who are considered first-year players. These are guys that have played in the NFL or been on an NFL roster in some capacity, but haven't done enough to earn a accrued season. So Tom Kennedy, I mentioned him earlier. Kennedy has played a regular season game, but he doesn't have an accrued season because he hasn't played enough regular season games. So he technically is still a first-year player from an experience standpoint, and therefore he can participate in rookie minicamp. So Tom Kennedy, Elise Mack, the tight end out of Notre Dame, Robert McCray, the edge rusher that they signed in the offseason, Anthony Pittman, who's been with the team for 2 years, but was only seen the regular season one game, week 17, 2 years ago. Jalen Elliott, the safety that they signed as an undrafted free agent last year out of Notre Dame. And then long snapper Scott Daly, who they signed this year, is just a guy who can spell Muehlbach in camp. He's also going to be there. And then I mentioned there were 5 tryout players, slot receiver A.J. Taylor from Wisconsin, I think that's right. He's a tight end out of Portland State a couple years ago. Nickelback Alex Brown, Elijah Holder from Stanford, and Nick, I think like I have mentioned. Yeah, and I think Holder will be like kind of like a slot. He's kind of a slot safety, so I might classify him as the Nickelback. And then yes, Nick Pickett is the final guy who we talked about previously. So there's your 32. The
a lot thing, of Notre Dame guys, like yeah, a sixth of that group are Notre Dame guys.
It feels like it, right? Because their undrafted class had a bunch of Notre Dame guys in it, and then the long snappers from Notre Dame and a couple Notre Dame guys from last year. So yeah, a lot of Notre Dame. Most interesting part about this 32 man roster, no quarterback. So I don't know what their plan is with the quarterback. They got to have something in mind. We don't know what that plan is. I don't know if
have one of the assistants. Is one of the assistants like an ex-quarterback in college? Well, the young guy somewhere.
Mark Brunell and Antoine Randall were both quarterbacks. That's true.
Yeah, they're right? Coaches that are quarterbacks. But
yeah,
even like even further down, you know, like even further down in the coaching depth chart, or in the front office depth chart, there's always like some 27-year-old who is a quarterback at some Division III school, and they'll throw him out there.
Detroit Lions beat writer, DetroitLions.com beat writer, Tim Twentyman was a former college quarterback. So maybe they got Tim out there. I don't know. Yeah,
throwing him passes. It'll be interesting. They've got to do something like that, right? Obviously, yeah, they don't have a quarterback listed, so they're going to have to dig one up from the – from the front office somewhere.
They got to have something. I don't know exactly what it is, but they've got something in mind. Goff, Boyle, Blau, they all have too many accrued seasons, so none of them can participate. It's got to be, and they didn't bring anybody else in, so it's got to be a staff member that's chucking that ball around.
Kennedy is going to be the captain of this group. He's been the star of training camp for 2 years now.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, he should be you know, very good among the non, you know, among the undrafted guys. That's for certain.
All right. So let's move on. Let's go to the schedule.
Yeah.
So that was big news from the week. There's a couple of shocking things. I don't know why I keep using the word shocking. None of this is shocking. They were going to have a schedule. They're going to play 17 games. We knew the 17 opponents. We actually, it's 14 opponents. They play three of them twice.
Correct.
And, but the couple of surprises, they played Monday Night Football against the Packers week two.
Right. So they open at home. You happy about that?
Yeah. What's whatever.
I think it's a good thing. Okay. I think that's a positive, because for a new regime to be able to open up at home, I think is a nice plus. Then you also take into consideration the fact that the preseason has one less game, because it's down to 3 weeks instead of 4 now, because they added the extra regular season game. But the time period in which the preseason games happen is still the same. So they added an extra week on. So we're playing into the second week of January now instead of the first week of January. So the time frame for the preseason is the same, but there's one less game. So that means there's going to be more time for coaches. And the third regular preseason game is also at home. So the Lions are going to be home for a very long period of time up and through that week one game. So I actually think it's a nice benefit. Things line up for them well, that they're going to be comfortable. They're going to be at home. It's a nice way for them to start. Now, then it flips in week two. As you mentioned, they get Monday Night Football, and it's, of course, in Lambeau. So
yeah. Okay. Wait. Sorry. Back to week one real quick.
Yeah.
If you go to FanDuel or one of the gambling websites, you'll see that the Lions are already 7.5 point underdogs in week one. Just noting.
Yeah.
Interesting stats. All right. So Packers week two in Lambeau, which is a positive in a way, because it's, well, I don't know, things always go crazy at Lambeau. That it's going to be nice weather in all likelihood.
Yes.
They're not going to be there in the middle of December. So that's a plus. Another potential plus is Aaron Rodgers could be gone. This could be week two of Jordan Love.
Yeah.
Which to you and I may not be a positive. You know, he's a good quarterback in college. Who knows if he's developed or not?
Well, I tell you what, I wonder if Aaron Rodgers leaves, I wonder if the ref bias leaves with him, because right now that's been the biggest obstacle for the Lions in Lambeau, has been the refs have been really giving them the wrong end of the stick. I'm just saying.
I'm bothering you.
It really does. But you know, we'll see. I think it would go. It would be a as close to a shock the world moment, I think, in the NFL as you could have that early in the season.
All right, week three schedule remains difficult. Lions return home but face Baltimore. You know, it's going to be right at the top of the AFC standings by the end of next season. Then they travel to Chicago for another Sunday. All these games except for the Packers game are on Sunday. I think they have, of course, Thanksgiving's on a Thursday. Do they have one other Thursday night?
Nope.
No, they don't have a Thursday. Nope. Just Thanksgiving Day. So go to Chicago October 3rd. Then they go to Minnesota on October 10th. So at least they're going to be close to home when they play two road games in a row.
Right. And you now have all three of your division away games gone by week five. By the time week five is over, you've already gotten all your division road games out of the way. I think that's a nice.
You might also be 0-5.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But
they're
out of the way.
After that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, they're out of the way at this point. Yeah. At that point. One other side note. Since the year 2000, the Lions have never lost when they've played on October 10th. They play the Vikings on October 10th.
Because it's your birthday.
It is my birthday. And I just happen to know. And they always win in the last 20 years. So, you know, the most memorable game is the Monday Night Football game against Chicago, the Javid Best run, the crowd noise causing the offensive line to fall start. Yeah. Remember that like 5 or 6 times? Yeah.
That was like 10 times.
Okay. It was insane. That was an October 10th game. So October 10th games are usually fun. They blew out the Rams like 55-6 or something like that on an October 10th game. So yeah, fun stuff.
Nice, useless factoid.
Yes, yes.
Well, we got to remember this on the podcast after October 10th if the Lions win, and just to keep that train going.
Right. All right.
The next week, they host the Bengals, and so we'll see. They should have a healthy Joe Burrow, and hopefully that team hasn't gelled by the time we face them. They go visit the big one. Sunday afternoon, October 24th, Lions go to SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles, face the Rams. Matthew Stafford and the Rams. So that's going to be a must-watch game.
Yeah, that's an afternoon game. It'd be interesting to see how the Rams go up until that point. I think that'll be a very interesting storyline. There's going to be a lot of fans with mixed reactions watching that game. That's for sure.
All right. Week 8 Lions host the Eagles. That's on Halloween. That's the Sunday afternoon. Oh, Halloween's on a Sunday this year.
Yeah.
All right. Then Lions bye week. So they play 8 games, have the bye week, then followed up with 9 games. So do you like the positioning of the bye week? It's a lot better than where they usually are.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. Last year was on October 10th. Right. It was the 11th or whatever, or 9th, right? Like, or 11th. It's been week 5 for a couple of years now. And week 4, I think the year before that. So I don't think they've had a bye in the middle or the second half of the season in over a half decade. So I think it's a very nicely balanced positioning right at the midway point for them. And, I think the players will like that. I'm very interested to see how that plays out, because when you're losing and your bye week is in week 5, by the time you hit Thanksgiving, if you're in a losing streak, it's an exhausting December, right? Because the players don't want to be there. They've been doing it for so long. It becomes a very tedious December, and this gives you a little bit. They can come out refreshed. There's a lot more positive, I think, vibes that come out of having a bye later in the year.
All right. So after the bye, the Lions finish up their Pennsylvania combo, and they travel to Pittsburgh to play the Steelers. November 21st, they go visit the Browns. So all these road games, and we already knew this, but you know, it's not a lot of travel for the Lions. Mm-mm. They travel to LA. We'll point out that they travel to Denver, but and they travel to Seattle. So three journeys on the road, but yeah, that's really it. You know, there's not a lot of travel for the Lions. So they return back home on November 25th for Thanksgiving against the Bears. Everybody's kind of upset about that they keep playing the Bears on Thanksgiving. This might be a bad Bears team, and we're probably a bad Lions team. And,
yeah. I was going to say 3 out of the last 4 years, they've had the Bears on Thanksgiving. Interesting side note here. The home game that's prior to the Thanksgiving Day home game is on Halloween. So they have a home game on Halloween, and then their next home game is on Thanksgiving. So that's another fun, interesting tidbit.
Holiday home games.
All right.
Would you have rather, okay, so looking at the schedule, and who knows how this would have all, you know, they've been talking about how they have 5,000 computers coming up with this. So they have the Bears, so we're against the Bears.
Yeah.
You know, having the Bears on Thanksgiving. So 49ers, Raven, you know, something different. We won't go with the teams in the division. 49ers, Ravens,
Bengals.
No, I guess the Bengals, but I think they would want to give them a better opponent. Cardinals. Which one of those? Let's leave the Bengals out. Let's Ravens, 49ers, Cardinals. Who would you rather have seen them play? If they would have put, you know, a team that's going to be considered to be at least decent next year.
Well, I'd say the Cardinals, because they always seem to play the Cardinals well. I'd say the Cardinals.
Except for when they're blowing a second half lead and tying in Cliff Kingsbury and Murray's first games. All right. Well, anyhow,
trust your quarterback.
Yeah, no, they didn't. Not that week. Then they faced the. You mentioned now. Here comes the gauntlet of divisional games as we round out the season. They host the Vikings on December 5th. Then they visit the Broncos, and that's your 17th game special.
That could be
Sunday afternoon game.
That could be a snow game, right?
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, mid-December in Denver. That could be interesting.
Then they face the Cardinals at home on December 19th. Then the day after Christmas, they travel to Atlanta.
Yep.
Then day after New Year's, they travel to Seattle and play a late afternoon game and close out the season. Man, January 9th is when they close out the season at home against the Packers.
So here's where the thing about the back end stretch here that I find interesting. Okay. This is a tough schedule. Of their 14 opponents, 10 of them have made the playoffs in the last 2 years. Three of them made the playoffs twice in both years, right? Ravens, Packers, Seahawks made them playoffs both years. The other, there's another seven teams that have been in the playoffs at least once in the last 2 years. So there's a lot of playoff teams or recent playoff teams that are on the Lions schedule this year. There's four though teams that have not been to the playoffs in the last 2 years. One of them is the Bengals, which they face in week six. And then the other ones are Broncos in week 14, Cardinals in week 15, and Falcons in week 16. So if for some reason they're still 500 at Thanksgiving, you have a nice stack of games there against opponents that are potentially beatable. So if you're looking for another positive on the schedule, the non-playoff teams are kind of grouped together at the end. Now the Seahawks and the Packers are just, I mean, that's going to be ridiculously difficult.
Yeah. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
I'm just saying there could be a nice stretch of December games where the Lions have an opponent that, you know, they can compete against. And so if you're I want the team to win, that's a nice block of games to have. If you're I'm hoping for team tank. Well,
yeah, you know, you're going to have a rough end of the year because they're going to start, they're going to win a couple of those games. And be like, no, you can't win.
Right.
What,
right.
The first pick? What are you doing winning?
Right. So that 14, 15 week, 14, 15, 16, that's an interesting block that will make December, I don't know, could be fun depending on where your stance is or, you know, could be excruciating depending on what your stance is.
Now, I'm looking on CBS here, and you can get this information anywhere, but the Lions have the tied for sixth hardest strength of schedule.
Yeah, ESPN has them.
Based off of 2020 record. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, CBS has what? You said six?
Tied for six, 143, 127, and two.
ESPN has them as the third most difficult, and PFF has them as their second most difficult.
Yeah, because they went through and did the they got all the math of what the expected records of all these teams are going to be in 2021 and what they expect them to be. There's interesting that we have the rest advantage. Did you see this? These charts?
Mm-mm.
The rest advantage charts. So the Lions, although having one of the most difficult schedules in the NFL, they have the third best situation when it comes to prep and rest out of all teams in the NFL. They only trail the Bengals and the Panthers.
Okay.
And it's all based off of crazy stuff like the amount of days the opponent has to prepare. So, you know, the Lions are facing teams coming off of Monday night games, or in the negative would be coming off of a Thursday night game where they get a couple extra days to practice to face the Lions. They games where they have more rest than the opponent, and weeks where they have short weeks but then play road games, you know, they take that all into account. And so according to all that, and we kind of mentioned it here, they don't have a lot of far away road games. They sit at third overall for prep and rest variables, so they have a favorable schedule when it comes to, you know, rest.
They only have one 6-day window where they play two games, and that's week 2 and 3. The rest of them are all full sevens. Well, actually, I take it back. The Sunday to Thanksgiving is also shorter. That's 5 days. But they have a much, they have now a larger gap after Thanksgiving, right? So, yeah, you got two short weeks and one really long week. And then not bad. It's interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, that was a little factoid I came across. Well, I better bring that up. That's about it. Yeah, so one of the hardest schedules in the NFL, no matter what way you cut it. I think as the season starts rolling on, I think that's going to hold up. I don't think a lot of those teams are going to be surprisingly bad. And in fact, like teams like Arizona and Atlanta and Cincinnati might be good.
Sure.
Be better than average. And if the Broncos end up with Rodgers, that weakens Green Bay, but it strengthens Denver. So it only helps us out a little bit. It's not going to help us out a lot.
It's a tough schedule. I mean, we knew it was going to be a tough schedule.
Yeah.
Heading into the year when we knew who the opponents were going to be. There's a couple of games that are just going to be really rough. Like the Packers, Ravens, and then Seahawks, Packers, those back-to-back games, those are going to be really tough. Those are three very established teams who have, each won their division at least once the last couple of years. There's going to be some tough stages of the season. I mean, there's going to be some good points too. Like, division games are always can be coin flips. They don't lose on October 10th. You never know what happens after a bye. There's all kinds of little wrinkles that could make it fun. But either way, expectations are low. And
Vegas over under is 5 for wins currently. The front page of the Detroit Free Press sports section, although they're known to be a little pessimistic about the Lions, had a big 5-12 record on Thursday. So, that's about where everybody's sitting at. That's probably right around where I'd be. I might be leaning more towards 4-13, but 5-12 is probably a better bet.
Yeah, I think they can beat the Bengals. I think they can beat the Eagles. I think they could beat the Broncos, Cardinals, Falcons. Those are 5 games that I think are winnable. And you never know.
They're going to definitely win a game they shouldn't. Happens every year.
With Patricia, it was always week 3 that was the where he would come out and surprise people.
Patriots.
So, could the Lions shock the Ravens? That would surprise me. But
I guess it would be a little there, but they're at home. Week 3, like you said, like the Lions have a knack for winning on week 3, so it'd be like, it's still early in the year. And they just caught them. They catch these teams.
Sure. And it's the NFL, man. You never know. If you get a good game plan, you can make teams vulnerable really quickly. So
yeah, and if you match up well, against some team for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I mean, really, that's what Campbell's been preaching. He's been preaching, I want to get my best guy against your weak guy, and I want to play matchup football. And so
some weeks it'll work, some weeks it won't.
Right. It's going to be a learning curve, but I think there's an opportunity for excitement, but we also have to, brace ourselves for some hard weeks as well. Yeah.
Yep. All right. That's about it.
Okay. I saw we had another rating. We bumped up again. So we keep going up there. Didn't have any written ones. But I did get sent something. I forwarded it to you. Every once in a while, I'll get someone that'll say, hey, I reviewed you, but not on iTunes. Because we don't always see the other platforms that allow reviews. We typically just get the iTunes stuff. So there's a
more easily accessible. Yeah,
correct. There's an app called the Podcast Addict, and they have a couple nice written reviews on them. Someone sent this to me, one of our buddies over in Germany, and they said, They wrote some nice things. There's a Double J was in there. 517 Bulldog had a couple. So we got some 5-star reviews on this app as well. Like I said, I wasn't familiar with it. And so it's nice when someone says, hey, you know, I found another way to review you, your podcast. And so, we're getting those as well. It's nice to hear because not all the podcast formats allow it. And so when they do, and you have an opportunity to do that, I think that's awesome. And I want everyone to know that we really do appreciate you helping us out on those other formats as well.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. Thank you everybody for listening, and it keeps us going. Yes. Keeps us doing this every week. So that's it. So now we're going to get to a little more of the slow time of the year. We will have rookie mini camp to talk about, but you know, we will still be bringing it to you, and we'll be talking about, there's of course plenty to talk about leading up to training camp. So that's it for this week. And until next time, let's go Lions.